Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two Go Anywhere pillows. Now MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two Go Anywhere pillows for 40% off. And that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow. All right, glad you're with us. Happy Monday. And write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravagance. What do I sense and feel and believe in my gut, my heart, my mind, my body, my soul? That a lot more people in the media are probably listening today. I'm just guessing. Linda, what do you think? There's probably more people listening today.
Just a few.
Just people that probably don't like me or this show, and they're dying for gossip. Anyway, we've got a lot to get to. This is going to be a big week for Trump. It looks like we've got a deal on health care, but it probably won't be voted on this week. Maybe get an update from Jamie Dupree if he's around. Jamie was writing us earlier today. And, of course, the president on Wednesday will be unveiling his economic plan, which is so desperately needed to get this economy back on track and get Americans out of poverty, off of food stamps, and back to work. Look, I've got to start with something that I'd rather not waste a lot of airtime on, that I'd rather not have to discuss. I'd rather not have my family have to go through, but it is what it is. And, you know, I want to just say this. I am extraordinarily humbled and very, very thankful for all of you in this audience. One thing I've always known my entire career, now 30 years in radio, 21 and a half years at Fox, is that I don't have this opportunity every day, but not for all of you and all of my irredeemable, deplorable friends that cling to their God, guns, Bibles, and religion. I have to say thank you, because the notes and the comments on social media that you have been making, and the fairness of judgment, more than anything else, when the case has been presented, it's not that difficult to discern what's going on here, and all of you have gotten it and gotten it very quickly and have offered words of support. It means a lot to me. And, you know, I want to start by addressing something that I have mentioned on the air before, but it is the reality if you are a conservative and a prominent conservative in the country today, and that is what I can only call a well-orchestrated effort by very intolerant people on the left that is purposefully designed to silence every conservative voice, and they're willing to do it by any means necessary. This is not a paranoid conspiracy theory. And it's just gotten to a point here where I've got to speak out, and I've got to bring you in the loop, and you've got to understand the environment in which we are working here. I think most of you do, because you see the day-to-day hostility just towards the president. And you see the hostility of anybody and everybody that dares to like and support him. How dare us disagree with them? And I'll explain who them are in a minute. They are in a minute. It's kind of like right out of the rules for radicals. This is Saul Alinsky, isolate, destroy, and et cetera, their targets. But look, I've been 30 years in radio. I've been at the Fox News Channel proudly 21 and a half years since they started in October 1996. I have to be honest. I mean, during that time, there has not ever been a time in my career that there wasn't an effort or an attempt to smear and slander and besmirch me. I mean, in all reality, I've been called everything. I don't think there's anything I haven't been called or accused of in the course of my career. but it's never been like it is today, as it is now. And, you know, so you understand the environment that Rush and Mark and Glenn Beck and Laura Ingraham and myself and Michael Savage and everybody in radio works under here. You need to understand this. And some of us get along and some of us don't get along. But mostly we do get along. But every single minute, every single second, 3 hours on radio every day, 1 hour on television every night, there are people in their underwears, some in New Mexico, for example, that are being paid to monitor every single word that all of us say. Every word. Not some words, not some days, every minute, every day, every prominent conservative that you like or maybe don't like are being monitored in the hopes that one word, one phrase, one sentence will come flying out of our mouths and they can twist, distort, or maybe we just say something stupid. We can't apologize for it because it's too late then. And that those words will be used because they don't like our politics to destroy and silence the voices that you want to hear and ruin people's reputation in the process and get us off the air. Now, and they use varying methods from there. They'll attack, they'll start these boycotts, advertiser boycotts. Well, they said this. Are you going to support them? And advertisers are naturally skittish. That's why I say I don't support boycotts. I don't want boycotts of liberal shows on radio or TV. I think they should be able to. Bill Maher eviscerated me this weekend. And I think Bill Maher should say anything he wants to say. I can criticize it. I can fight back if I want. He's irrelevant to me. But it's the environment we're working in and we live in. Now, I can tell you in 30 years, I don't know that it's ever gotten this intense. I think in the age of Trump, it's only gotten worse. There's no surprise to any of you that listen to this program that I support the president. I support his policies. And, you know, you've got a liberal fascism that has emerged that can't stand opposition voices, and they want to shut us all down, all of us. Now, if you don't know, I got to be honest, I have a pretty thick skin. I really do. None of this, it's like water off a duck's back to me. I call people out. I'm on the air 4 hours a day. I dish it out, give my opinions, my point of view. And for all these years, people ask me all the time, oh, are you okay, my friends? They're like, oh, dude, I read that article. Are you okay? Are you okay? I'm like, yeah, what are you talking about? You know, is that supposed to affect me? It doesn't. Maybe I've just got a missing chip, like Jennifer Aniston once said about Brad Pitt. I don't know. But in light of recent events, I've now come to the conclusion I can't remain silent anymore. I can no longer let this slander, these smearing attempts of me, slide by. And I just made a decision that from now on, because I could either be silent, take it like I have for 30 years, not give a rip, but it's now to the point they want, there are groups of people that want me off the air badly. They want my voice silenced. So I can either sit back and wait for that day to come, or I can fight. And I've decided, for those of you in my audience that like this show, that like my TV show, that I don't want them to be able to take it from you, nor do I want them to be able to take it from me. And I think that our voices combined are very important. Conservative talk radio is extremely important to the future of the country, in my view, as is the Fox News channel. Extremely important to the country. So from now on, I'm making an announcement. I made an announcement this weekend. Any person, any group, any organization, any media outlet that slanders, besmirches me, lies about me, my character, they're not getting a pass. Because at this point, enough is enough. And I have hired a team of some of the best attorneys, I mean the best, in the country to work on my behalf. Now, as I'm sure everybody knows, isn't it great when you have to read lies about yourself all weekend long, and everybody knows about the lie the weekend that was told. It just came for me this weekend when an individual who, for well over a decade, I mean, it's, what is it, 12 years, whatever, however many years, has made one outrageous allegation and told numerous lies about me for well over a decade. And now this person has resurfaced with more untrue claims about me. Person goes on a radio show, makes unfounded accusations, which, by the way, now, interestingly, after my statement, they're now backing off of, but that's a separate issue for a separate day. Only after I responded to the baseless and false claims. But this is not the first time I've had to deal with this individual. This person has repeatedly spread lies about me. Back in 2010, you may remember I was doing my Freedom Concert tours, raising a lot of money, millions of dollars, for the Freedom Alliance and a charity that supports our veterans and scholarships for the children of slain and severely injured soldiers. I have donated, I just checked in with my accountant who did the math, well over $1 million, most of it to this particular charity, but other military charities in my life. I spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars out of pocket to facilitate these concerts. And, you know, this person went out an allegation saying that I was misappropriating funds to pay for planes and hotels and for myself. Not one plane, not one hotel room, not one meal was ever paid for by this group. And they refuted it themselves. No apology, no correction after these slanderous accusations are made. So I released a statement this weekend. No correction. Why doesn't anyone ever correct? Just say, I'm sorry. I'm wrong. We made a mistake. So this weekend, I released this statement. I said, let me be clear. The comments about me on a radio show last week by this individual are 100% false, complete fabrication. This individual is a serial harasser who has been lying about me for well over a decade. The individual has a history. By the way, people coming out of the woodwork, you wouldn't believe how many emails I have, of making provably false statements against me in an effort to slander, smear, besmirch my reputation. The individual has not just slandered me over the years, but many people who this individual disagrees with. The individual desperately seeks attention by any means necessary, including making unfounded personal attacks and using indefensible and outrageous political rhetoric. And I said bluntly, my patience with this person is now over. And I have retained a team of some of the finest and toughest lawyers in the country who are now in the process of laying out the legal course of action we will be taking against this individual. Now, in this fiercely divided, vindictive political climate, I will no longer allow slander and lies about me to go unchallenged. I see this as a coordinated effort that is now afoot to silence those with conservative views. So I'm just pledging today on the radio, like I did this week, and I'm going to fight every single lie about me by all legal means available to me as an American. I'll have more about this on the other side. We're not going to spend the rest of the show on this. There's too much news. I'm not going to allow myself to be distracted, but I do have more to say because there's a bigger picture here that I want to share with you, and I don't think others are going to get to. All right? I'm not going to say much more about this except, and I'll deal with this tonight on Hannity, 10 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Things are so out of control right now. It's like blood in the water. Let's get this person. Let's get that person. You know, it reminds me of 2010 when the IRS was weaponized against Tea Party and conservative groups to silence them in the lead up to the 2012 election. It worked. There's nothing that people would like more than to shut down Fox, shut down this radio program, Rush, Laura, Beck, my buddy Levin, the great one, Savage, all these people. Shut down everybody. So it's not about one individual. This is not about Sean Hannity here. Because I'm telling you that this is a well-orchestrated attempt to now silence the voice of every conservative in the country. And if somebody doesn't finally take a stand here, frankly, I wish it was somebody other than me. You know, I don't feel like doing this. But if we don't stop it now, there won't be any conservative voices left. I'm not the only person here that these liberal fascists routinely target. And like me, conservatives are monitored. You know, every conservative is monitored every word they say, every word they write. And contrary to the left's stated position about being so open-minded, you know, this effort to silence is alive and well in America today. Their goal is simple: shut up, shut down, completely silence conservatives by any means necessary. And unlike the left, I have no problem with what liberals say. None. I have no problem with Bill Maher slandering me. There was this girl, I don't even remember her name, called me something on Twitter this weekend, and I kind of made fun of her. It turns out she works at Fox Sports, and then people are like, oh, you're going to get her fired. I'm like, no, whoa. I don't want to fire anybody. You can say anything you want about me, but if you slander me, smear me, besmirch me, lie, I'm gonna go after you with my team of attorneys. So, you know, I call people out for their bias. We explain why they're wrong, but I never call for the left to be silenced. So I will tell you one other thing. Don't think this isn't tied to President Trump, because it is. I've never seen any one individual smeared and slandered like him. And we've seen it repeatedly. The left has no limits in these efforts to destroy him. They've gone after his wife, his 10-year-old son, his daughter, his son-in-law, his, you know, Reince and Bannon and Miller and Kellyanne. I mean, in the most vicious, vile way imaginable. Ultimately, their goal on the left, they want as much collateral damage. They want no support for the president. They've tried to undermine the outcome of this election since November 9th. So I just ask you, you know, as I will be, things will be coming out about this case that I am going to just lay it all out for you. Just have an open mind. That's all I ask. I was lied about this weekend. I was smeared this weekend. We allow this to happen to America. America as we know it, freedom of speech as we know it, is over. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. Honestly, we've got too much to get to today to really focus on me, but I just want you to know the environment in which we're working. The Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Bibi Netanyahu, will join us at the top of the hour. We got the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, is going to join us. And we've been telling you about the attack on Extortion 17 that killed 17 Navy SEALs and 13 other brave Americans. Well, now we have a whistleblower. Retired Air Force Captain Joni Marquez is now speaking out. She was there. Because of the rules of engagement in the Obama era, she literally had the enemy in her sights, asked for permission to fire and take them out. They were firing on Americans, and she was denied permission, which would have saved the lives of 30 Americans. How does this possibly happen? Sarah Carter broke this story, of course, with Circa.com. She's the senior national security correspondent. She'll also join us today. It's unbelievable to me. Some bad news for the left, and that is this Washington Post poll. This has got to drive the liberals insane, because Trump would win the popular vote now over Clinton by 4 million votes. And, you know, also 2/3 say Democrats are out of touch with you, the American people. But when you get into this whole issue of Trump, you know, it's his approval rating now, according to this poll, is not exactly a favorable poll for Donald Trump. But anyway, has him at 42%. And as the networks love to emphasize, that's the lowest approval rating of any president in history at this point in their term. Okay, but the fake news department media, Democratic media, still gives Trump 99% negative coverage, more than any other president that I've seen in my lifetime. And a lot of the things about him that are said are smear and slander. This is by the mainstream media. But the bombshell in this survey is that the American people, if they could redo the election today, Donald Trump would defeat Hillary Clinton by winning the popular vote.
Don't you someday want to see a woman president of the United States of America?
All right, I told you to burn those tapes. That's $100. And that one. And all of them. And don't play them anymore. It's irritating. We played it enough during the campaign. Stop. It's driving me. I can't take it. Anyway, but they have him winning 43% to 40%. And as this poll samples adults as opposed to registered voters or likely voters, adult voter samples almost always skew in favor of Democrats, which suggests that Trump's popular vote victory would even be higher than 4 million. According to Wikipedia, there were almost 129 million votes cast last November. And that's a lot of votes. When Donald Trump would win the popular vote today. And by the way, 98% of people that voted for Trump don't regret it. And I don't regret it. You know, they're trying to say he's had a horrible 100 days. He didn't get Obamacare repealed and replaced yet. Well, give him time, because this weekend, the Republicans agreed on the issue that was the sticking point for the Freedom Caucus, thanks to the Tuesday group and the study group and the moderates working with the Freedom Caucus and all together finally. And as it relates to specific issues, they've got a deal. Now, I don't think they're going to do it this week. It looks like next week, which is why I told them to come in this week, last week, and get it done. Because I knew this week was going to be consumed by this continuing resolution. And, of course, the threat of Chuckie Schumer and Nancy Pelosi of a government shutdown, because they don't want to fund the continuing resolution if Trump is going to get money to build the border wall, which he, in fact, supports. And we'll even ask Jeff Sessions about this, because Jeff Sessions was down at the wall when we were in Israel last week, and we'll get his take on all of this. Oh, by the way, another bit of bad news for the liberal media. More Trump success. U.S. home resales rose more than expected in March to the highest level in more than a decade. Existing home sales climbed 4.4% for the month. By the way, we had the lowest home ownership rate in 51 years. Now maybe people are feeling better about the economy and thinking, all right, maybe I'll jump in. Interest rates are still low. And if there's any way you can pull that off and get a low interest rate loan, relatively low, 4%, 4.2%, whatever it is, get it now, because I remember when interest rates were double digits. It'll happen again at some point. Sales have now increased to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 5.71 million units as of last month, the highest level this gauge has seen since February of 07. So this is, why do you think this is happening? Oh, by accident. I'm sure Trump had nothing to do with it. 67%, more than two-thirds of Americans now say the Democrats are out of touch with the American people, you think? Maybe they want to shut the government down this week, but it's not going to help them politically. I'll tell you what I think people want today. And I'll tell you why I think Trump is as popular as he is, especially in red state America. If you watch my buddy Sean Hannity, Bill Cunningham on with George Stephanopoulos, he is a great American. There's a different country in the middle of the country, in Ohio, in Michigan, in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and all those little red states in the middle that basically consume 95% of the landmass in this country. And then you got the big cities that go Democrat. But anyway, but the Democratic Party is now viewed as more out of touch than either President Trump or the party's political opponents. Two-thirds think Democrats are out of touch because the American people just gave them 8 years and they've done nothing. They squandered it. Highest level of lowest level labor participation rate, 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty, 1 in 6 American men 18 to 34 in jail or out of work, living in mommy's basement. I mean, these economic statistics are horrible. And you know what people want? They want to get back to work. They want to survive. They want to do well. They want to prosper. They want a better America for their kids and their grandkids. That's what they want. This is not that hard to figure out. I don't know how many of you were watching failed French President Hollande called on the French to oppose Le Pen. Le Pen. Le Pen. How do you say it? You've got the French accent. Marine Le Pen. No, do it in your French accent.
No, it's just to say Marine Le Pen.
Do it in your New York accent.
No, I'm definitely not going to do that.
First of all, Marine Le Pen.
I just hope she wins. That's all I care about.
Yeah, well, anyway, there's going to be a runoff here. And Hollande called on voters to back the liberal Macron in the second round of the presidential election. When does this happen? On May what? May 6th?
May 7th.
May 7th? All right. So we'll be watching that pretty closely. We have more Trump derangement syndrome out there. You've got to, you know, could you imagine anyone ever did this to Obama? Left-wing college professors, all at taxpayer-funded universities, they continue to fantasize about killing Trump. Could you imagine if this happened with any professor on any college campus and they're fantasizing about assassinating then-President Obama? It wouldn't be tolerated, nor should it be tolerated. Anyway, a professor at an Alaska university has put a painting of President Trump's decapitated head on display at the college art gallery How is that art? Is that like the Virgin Mary, a picture of the Virgin Mary with elephant dung, or the U.S. American flag dipped in a toilet, or a place for people to stomp on the American flag? Unbelievable. By the way, did you see we have another we have another airline disaster? Now, we had a good trip. We went out on El Al. Came back on Delta. Which did you like better, Delta or El Al?
I like them both. I mean, the people were amazing on both. I felt very lucky to have such good trips.
By the way, it's great that you can sleep on planes because I come home. This was the worst part of my weekend. So I come home. I have no sleep in Israel at all, like 2 hours in 3 days. I slept a little bit on the plane, you know, knocked myself out with booze and Advil PM. And so I get a little bit of sleep, not much, land. And then I say, you know what? I'm going to stay up. This way I'll really sleep great tonight. And then I go play golf a little bit with a buddy of mine. I'm not a good golfer. I just go out to get some fresh air. And then I take my daughter to dinner at her favorite restaurant. I hadn't seen my daughter in a while. And I go take her out to dinner, my whole family. And then I'm at the restaurant, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to sleep. And then all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose in my life. I'm like, oh, no, not when I'm at my worst. Not when I'm, why is it when I'm that tired? Unbelievable. Anyway, so we had the United Airlines, you know, in that case, they bring on the police because they overbooked the flight and they drag this poor guy out by his hands. They're dragging him down the aisle. I mean, it's just so dumb. When all they had to do was say, how many people would like 4 free tickets to anywhere United flies, first class, and we'll pay for your hotel room? Okay, and we'll give you 8 tickets. And we'll give you $2,000 spending money. Now they're going to pay millions by the time it's said and done. Now you got this video. It starts late, the video, of an American Airlines flight attendant apparently nearly whacks this poor mother that's holding twins in her hands. And, you know, with the metal stroller, you know, the poor woman is reduced to tears. Then a passenger stands up for the woman and says, hey, I'd be pissed too. What are you doing? You don't pick on a lady with 2 kids. What are you doing? Trying to wake the guy up. The guy gets in his grill and sticks his finger in his face. And the guy goes right back at him. Pulled a Hannity on him. Really? You want to go here? Well, let's go. Let's throw down. Pretty funny. But not funny for the poor mother. I felt bad for that poor woman. Good grief. You know, here's the simple answer. Oh, madam, welcome aboard. Oh, what beautiful children you have. Let me help you get settled. Can I help you with your stroller? Can I hold one of your children for you? Can I make it? How can I make
it
easier for you?
How hard is it to travel with children? Think about all the people we saw coming home from Israel from Passover.
Yeah.
These people, you have so much stuff when you have children. And it's like the best way to make things move along more quickly is to help, not to hinder. And they did upgrade her to first class and get her where she needed to go, and they apologized. At least they started to do the right thing, unlike United.
A little bit late for...
Yeah, that guy needs to go. He should not be working anywhere with people or customer service. He needs to work somewhere where there's absolutely no human interaction because he clearly does not know what he's doing.
Unbelievable. And it's not that hard. You know, if you remember, and you're not going to give me credit for this, but with everybody in our staff, and remember, especially on the way back, we had our film crew with us. I mean, everybody. I mean, all the guys were all on the same flight. It was really cool. We're all in business class together. So, you know, it was kind of fun, although it was a late night flight and we were sleeping. But it was nice to hang out because we're all good friends and we've all worked together for 20 years. But if you notice, somebody, I won't mention names, me, walked around, and what did I try? I helped Fran. I helped you. I helped Sweet Baby because his back is awful. Putting your bags in the overhead compartment like I did on the way out for you, in case you forgot.
You help everybody with their bags, I have to say.
Because I can handle it. My back is fine.
I think I'm the only person that was assaulted or had, you know, bread or socks thrown at them. But... putting that aside,
okay, it wasn't a loaf of bread. The socks were brand new, not old, smelly socks. They came with the LL.
The details don't matter, do they?
The details matter. And
it's
I did
a small
not...
loaf of bread. It's not a big loaf of bread. They're clean
it's
socks,
like,
not dirty.
It's like
socks.
A baby roll type of
it's
bread that you can
roll.
Eat. You can eat in one bite.
You can
bite.
Only throw bread at people when it's very small.
Oh my god!
But you are very nice. You're always offering to help people. Do you want me to carry your bag? Can I put your bag up? You helped elderly women, small women.
But you want to know why?
Why?
Because I watch these poor people on airplanes struggle. And you know what? For most people, they all overpack. I'm not an overpacker. And I lift these bags and I like, well, look at the person. I'm like, really? Really? 300 pounds? How many pairs of shoes, lady, you got in here? And because I can, I'm strong. I do 100 push-ups a day, 100 sit-ups a day. So it's easy for me, and I see these poor people about to throw their backs out.
Listen, when you started doing push-ups right when we were about to get on the plane, I was trying to figure out what you were doing. And then you looked at me, you said, I'm prepping. I have a lot of luggage to get in the overhead, so I need to get my workout in real
quick. Are
you
done lying to our audience?
And then the sit-ups you're right there in front of everybody. I was embarrassed.
You're as bad as all of these liberals that lie about me and slander. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sick my team of attorneys now.
Good luck, because they're friends of mine, too. You're in trouble.
Well, don't give their names away yet, because I want...
I won't. That's privileged.
But you will admit they're three of the toughest, best attorneys in the country.
Watch out.
You know what I think I'm going to have to do? I think I'm going to have to put them on a full year-round retainer, because I don't think these attacks are stopping by any means. And you know what I'll do? I'll just let them handle it all, and then I'll go to sleep every day.
I think that sounds like a good idea.
I think that's a pretty good idea. That's sort of like, you know, you do your job, Ethan his, and Sweet Baby his, and Jason his, and Sunshine over there hers, and everybody at Fox does their job, and I do mine, and, you know, we'll just, maybe we ought to just create a new law firm. Save conservatism are us. And I'll fund it, and I'll defend
everybody.
There's
a nice ring to it. Just flows right off the tongue.
All right, are you done making fun of me? I'm glad you've enjoyed this. Meanwhile, I'm at the most tired I've been after this trip. By the way, who filled in for me? I didn't even ask, because I was in a meeting.
That's because you have people to handle those things.
Who filled in?
Mark Simone.
I love Mark. I saw Mark at an event. By the way, I've never been to an event in New York without seeing Mark or Curtis. It's hilarious. And I did get to see, Curtis came to Alan's funeral, which was really nice. And I saw Mark at this event that took place the other night. And I just love that everybody knows him. And nobody knows me. Everybody knows Mark Simone. He's like Mr. New York. All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. We just came back from an amazing trip to Israel. One of the highlights was literally showing how small a country this is. Joining us now is the Prime Minister, who I was going to have on Friday's program, but obviously we got delayed with other issues. Mr. Prime Minister, thank you for taking time today. How are you, sir? It's great to see you.
Well, I'm fine, Sean. It was wonderful to see you in Israel. It's good to talk to you today.
You know, that helicopter ride, I don't know if you had a chance to watch the program, but when you actually see it up close and you see that when we take off from Tel Aviv on the Mediterranean and we go up the coast and you're looking out your window and you can see the borders and you can see where Israel's enemies are, just like in 2014 when I was in Gaza, and you look out in towns like Sarot and where they've been hit with 10,000 rockets in 10 years from Gaza, it is the most precarious, defensible, most precarious and dangerous situation on the face of the earth. It's scary to me.
Yeah. Let me try to give your audience a feeling for the size of Israel. If you fly across the United States from the East Coast to the West Coast, it'll take you about 5 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you fly from the West Coast of Israel to the eastern border of Israel, it'll take you, on that same airplane, 5 minutes. You got that?
5 minutes across Israel.
5 minutes with, you know, so 5 hours compared to 5 minutes. So Israel is a small country, an exceedingly small country. It's about the size of New Jersey. But it is a very powerful country, among other things, because of the spirit of our people, the courage of our soldiers, and the friendship that we enjoy with the American people and the help of the United States. We appreciate that very much. Israel is a forward position for the United States and for the Western world, for Western civilization. If you look at it, you say there's the United States, you know, there's Europe, then you get to Israel, and it sort of stops at that point. I mean, there are other friends of the United States, and I'm, you know, very glad that there are governments in our region in the Middle East who are friendly with the United States. But Israel is the only place where both the people and the government and the people, are solidly pro-American, solidly pro-Western, solidly rooted in our common values of democracy and freedom. And that's the strength of Israel, our values and our willingness to defend those values. And when we defend ourselves, we also defend our common civilization against our common enemies, the enemies that are called militant Islam.
You know, Mr. Prime Minister, you can see that inclusiveness just when you go to the Old City in Jerusalem, where you have a Jewish sector and you have an Armenian sector, and you have a Christian sector, and you have a Muslim sector. All in, what, how many square miles are we talking about where all
about
of these...
About 1 square mile.
1 square mile.
Less.
And so all of these religions, you know, are included in this historic land, which is Israel and Jerusalem.
Indeed it is.
Yeah.
But they are. But I have to say that in all the thousands of years of Jerusalem's history, and in all the centuries since the rise of the great monotheistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, the only time that people of these three faiths could worship freely in their respective religious sites has been under Israel's sovereignty. When Israel became the sovereign of Jerusalem, when Israel became responsible to maintain peace and tranquility for the holy sites, that's when you've had that kind of unfettered access and that kind of religious freedom. And, you know, that's no small thing in the Middle East, where you have militant Islamists butchering other Muslims, butchering Christians. Christians are under tremendous assault in the Middle East. You know, the fact is that the only place where those rights are guaranteed and where Christians are guaranteed a thriving future is in the state of Israel. And today, this year, we're marking 50 years of the liberation of Jerusalem and 50 years of religious freedom in this holy city.
What is the percentage of Arabs that actually vote in Israeli elections, for those that don't know how inclusive Israel as a country is?
Well, people don't know that, you know, of the Israel's 8 million citizens, over a million, close to a million and a half, are actually Arab citizens. And they're the ones who, you know, they vote for our parliament, they vote in our elections, they serve in the government, they serve in the Supreme Court. People don't know that. And they're probably, look, in the Middle East, I don't think that's very common to have that kind of freedom.
No.
Israel is a genuine democracy.
Mr. Prime Minister.
It's maligned terribly, but it is, in fact, a beacon of liberty and human rights in an otherwise fairly dark region.
I don't disagree with that at all. Let me ask you, I thought the best speech, and I've known you for well over two decades of my life now, going back a long time, and I've known you when the first time you were prime minister, I've known you since that time, now that you've taken, and that you may end up being the longest consecutive serving prime minister in Israeli history following Ben-Gurion, but I guess the best speech I think you ever gave was here on American soil when you came to talk and speak out against this horrible Iranian deal. And that is $150 billion taxpayer dollars going to Iran. They spin their centrifuges, questionable inspections, 25 days notice, the right to partner with Russia to build missile defense, build their conventional weapons. It was a horrible deal. You tried to warn America. President Obama was very angry that you came here and spoke that way. But I thought it was one of your best speeches. You know, I went back and I looked at Bill Clinton. He promised that when he gave North Korea $4 billion, they wouldn't get nuclear weapons. Well, they got them. And President Obama and Susan Rice and John Kerry said once they drew the red line in the sand with Syria, they got rid of all their chemical weapons. We know that's not true. To me, this deal will facilitate a nuclear-armed Iran unless they're stopped. What is your warning to the people of this world?
Look, I spoke about this with President Trump and with Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, who was just here. I think we see eye to eye. I don't think. I know we see eye to eye that Iran is not the solution to the problems of the Middle East, but in many ways the main problem, because most of, you know, all the countries in the region are suffering from Iranian aggression, and to have this Iran that is the foremost sponsor of terrorism in the world, to have this terrorist state walk into a nuclear arsenal, which is what this agreement ultimately paid, is obviously a big mistake. And I took that message to the American Congress. I had many areas of agreement with President Obama, but I also some disagreements. And this was a very strong area of disagreement, because I think that a nuclear Iran threatens the future of my country, and I felt obligated to speak about it. This agreement does not obligate Israel. We will do anything that we need to do to make sure that this terrorist regime that calls death to America, death to Israel, that harms and harasses U.S. ships, that's killed U.S. soldiers in Iraq, that stamps on American flags, and threatens to eradicate my state. I'll do everything in my power to make sure that this regime does not have nuclear weapons.
Well, I think it's a simple mathematical equation. A squared, nuclear weapons. B squared, in the arms of radical Islamic mullahs, the number one state sponsor in the world, equals a potential Holocaust. And I don't use that word lightly in our time. And I know you talked about it this weekend. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is with us. He'll stay a few minutes longer. On the other side, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. All right, as we continue with the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu continues with us. My next question to you is, you know, one of the maybe a positive outcome of the president of President Obama's really bad deal is it has brought Israel closer. A new alliance is emerging in the Middle East with Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, with the Egyptians, the Jordanians. And if you add America to that equation, it seems to me that there is an alliance strong enough to stop Iranian hegemony in the region and to stop their pursuit of nuclear weapons.
There's no question the countries in the region see, as I do, that Iran is the greatest threat to the peace and tranquility of the region. There is a very broad agreement of that. And if before I was the only one speaking out loud, the others who are saying that openly. And again, there's a clear change in the American position, a very welcome change that President Trump has enunciated. Look, today is Holocaust Day, Holocaust Remembrance Day. And my responsibility as the Prime Minister of Israel is to make sure that such tragedies never repeat. I think this is obviously something of vital interest to me and my people, but I think it's also something of vital interest to the world, to America, and to all civilized people. Iran seeks to dominate the world. Iran seeks nuclear weapons. Iran is also building submarines, satellites, precision-guided missiles, and many, many other weapons, and it is arming terrorists left and right. It is threatening, it is trying to conquer Yemen. It is in Iraq. It is in Syria. It has killed many, many Americans. It is supporting Hezbollah in Lebanon. This is an all-purpose terrorist state. It also hangs gays. It kills opposition leaders, hangs them from cranes. It tortures journalists. Iran is a bad deal. It's a bad regime. It should not be allowed to have nuclear weapons. And yes, it is creating a change in our part of the world because, as I told you last week, for the first time in my lifetime, many of the Arab states are thinking differently about Israel, not as their ally, enemy rather, but as their indispensable ally.
Let me ask you about that, because you said to me in this interview, I want peace, I've been to war. And you said that in the case of the Palestinians, they need to prove that they want peace. And Mahmoud Abbas, for example, says one thing about the blood of Israelis when he is in the Middle East, and he'll be coming to see the president soon. And I am fairly certain that he will tell the president just the opposite and won't be reiterating those things he says when he's back home. So my question to you is, you know, is there another option besides land for peace, because you barely have defensible borders now? Is there an option to partner, say, with the Emirates or the Saudis, and perhaps President Trump can broker that deal?
I think there are many possibilities in the region, and I'd love to be able to speak to President Trump about that, continue the conversation we've had. As far as the Palestinians are concerned, and as far as Israel is concerned, nobody wants peace more than Israel, because we know the cost of war. I know the cost of war. I lost my older brother in the war on terrorism. He fell while leading the Israeli rescue mission to Entebbe to release 103 Israeli hostages. It succeeded, but he was the lone military casualty of this great rescue mission. I myself was wounded
You were shot in the shoulder, I remember, yeah.
No, it wasn't the shoulder, it was in my arm, and I still feel it.
Right.
But from friendly fire, too. But we burst into a Sabena airplane in order to liberate Israeli and other passengers who were held hostage by four terrorists. four Palestinian terrorists, and we were able to overcome them. So, you know, if you face death, if you've experienced death of your loved ones and fallen comrades, you know the cost of war, and therefore, you know, nobody wants peace more than Israel. The people of Israel yearn for peace, pray for peace, and are ready to do a lot for peace. One thing they're not ready to do is give land which is then turned not for the purpose of peace, but turned against us as a base to attack us.
You've already tried that.
That is, unfortunately, what has happened in the past.
Yeah.
We yielded territory, but we gave the land. We didn't get peace. We got thousands of rockets fired in the cities of Israel, and we don't want to have that happen again. The Palestinians, you know, they speak peace to foreign audiences, but to their own people, they say, you know, we have to dissolve the state of Israel, knife Israelis. We can't accept a Jewish state. And I'm talking about, unfortunately, their leaders. I'd like to see that change. If it changes, if they accept Israel genuinely, you know, we could have a brilliant future for both Israelis and Palestinians.
But well, that's a
how can Abbas speak of peace with us, with Israel, and at the same time pay terrorist murderers, okay, who are in our jails? He's paying them stipends. He's paying the families of dead terrorists.
$300 million a year, or thereabouts.
Hundreds of millions of dollars a year over a decade. That's $1 billion going to pay terrorists who are hell-bent on murdering Israelis. So I'd like to see a change in that. These are the kinds of, you know, I have no conditions on meeting, on talking. That's fine. But if you really want to see a change, a move towards peace, that Israelis would embrace and would be enthusiastic about, is to see a real change in the Palestinian policies. You know, if someone paid anyone who murdered Americans by a sliding scale, the more Americans they killed, the more money they got, which is what the Palestinian Authority is paying these Palestinian killers, wouldn't you expect to see a change if they said they professed they wanted peace?
Well, I believe that
peace. The Palestinians should stop paying terrorist murderers. That's the way to go get to peace.
And that's the law of the land. Mr. Prime Minister, it was an honor to see you. It was great to be back in your country. Incredible hospitality by everybody. It is also great to have you back here. We look forward to when you are back in the States. And thank you so much for all the time and your generosity. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sean. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, sir. All right, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Jeff Sessions, when we get back, as we continue.
Well, we're going to get it paid for one way or the other. I know there's $4 billion a year in excess payments, according to the Department of Treasury's own Inspector General several years ago, that are going to payments to people, tax credits that they shouldn't get. Now, these are mostly Mexicans, and those kind of things add up. $4 billion a year for 10 years is $40 billion. There are a lot of ways we can find money to help pay for this, but in the long run,
how are you going to capture that money?
What's that?
How are you going to capture that money?
The Department of Treasury, several years ago, under the Obama administration, said that if you changed the regulations and enforced it properly, it would save up to $4 billion a year. There are other things that we can do at the border to create revenue that would pay for the wall. There's no doubt about that.
But in your discussions with your counterparts in Mexico, they've given no indication at all that the Mexican government is prepared to pay a single cent for this wall.
Well, I don't expect the Mexican government to appropriate money for it, but there are ways that we can deal with our trade situation to create the revenue to pay for it, no doubt about it.
Even though he hasn't kept this specific commitment right there, the president did say, as I said this week to the Associated Press, that the dreamers should rest easy. He's not going after the dreamers. That's his policy. He said, is it the policy of the Justice Department?
That the Homeland Security has primary jurisdiction there. Their first and strongest priority, no doubt about it, is the criminal element that we have in our country that have come here illegally. So they're focusing primarily on that. And there's no doubt the president has sympathy for young people who were brought here at early ages.
So they can rest easy?
Well, we'll see. I believe that everyone that enters the country unlawfully is subject to being deported. However, we don't have the ability to round up everybody, and there's no plans to do that. But we're going to focus first, as the president has directed us, on the criminal element, and we've got to get that under control.
I don't think there's any doubt that the open border, the lawlessness that we've had, is a factor in the rise of this MS-13. We know they're violent. We know that if we focus our prosecutorial and investigative resources, and we had a meeting today with all the top federal law enforcement officers and the agencies in our government to focus on this group, and as we have cases and we work them hard, we pursue convictions and then we deport people who are here unlawfully, we can devastate this gang. We're going after them. We are not going to allow them to take over a block, a corner of our communities and terrorize people with this violence. They use machetes. They kill children. They put children in prostitution at age 12. This is one of the most violent gangs in the history of our country, no doubt about it.
All right, that was the Attorney General Jeff Sessions, I believe, on Thursday when we were in Israel. And he, of course, talking about the president keeping another promise, wants to build the border wall. Border wall now has become a big issue as it relates to the continuing resolution. Democrats don't want to fund that wall, even though it is the law of the land. Mr. Attorney General, welcome back to the program. We appreciate you being with us.
Sean, it's an honor to be with you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, let's talk about, first of all, the success. I mean, just enforcing the laws since the president has gotten into office, we've seen, what, a 67% reduction in illegal immigrants even without the wall. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. I knew that we could make good progress, but I didn't know March, that I guess the third month he's been in office, we would have the lowest entry of illegal aliens in 17 years. So we've seen great things. General Kelly, Secretary Kelly of Homeland Security, his Border Patrol, his ICE officers, their morale is surging. I've just come from the border. They are motivated. They're making real progress. But, you know, let's be frank. The truth is that if Hillary Clinton had been elected, we'd be nowhere close to this. It's his appointment of General Kelly. It's Donald Trump's clear message that do not come into this country illegally. That has reduced the attempts to enter unlawfully, and he really deserves credit. I doubt Hillary would have appointed me as Attorney General either. But so we just at a position where this administration is focused. We need the wall to finish the job. And, Sean, we are at a point. I want everybody to understand we can end illegality at the border. We can create a lawful system of immigration. We just need to follow through, stay on path, stay on the right way, and then people can come lawfully. They come every day by the millions. And we admit 1.1 million people a year to lawful residents, permanent residents in the United States. So we're not against talking about ending immigration. We're talking about creating a lawful system, one a great nation can be proud of.
Let me ask some of the comments. Now, you got Chuck Schumer, the Democrats, all threatening to shut the government down if the Republicans appropriate the money, as they should by law, to pay for the wall. And you agree with the president that Mexico will pay for it. And you said by cutting off improperly paid tax credits granted mostly to Mexicans that the government would save more than enough to pay for the wall.
Yes, it would do it. And I didn't make it really clear, but these are tax credits that are going to people that are not citizens, that don't have Social Security numbers, and are filing I-10 documents. And in the course of it, they're not paying taxes. They're asking for refunds for tax credits for children and other reasons. We've had IG just hammered the fraud and abuse in that system. And it was the Obama administration's inspector general that found this. It has not yet been closed. It's just one of the incredible abuses where we reward illegal immigrants or even legal immigrants with benefits they shouldn't get.
Yeah, well, to me, it's a very simple thing. I mean, the billions of dollars we're also spending on the healthcare system, the educational system, the criminal justice system is enormous, and we've been paying this now for decades. On top of the fact that I've always felt the greater danger was that if somebody comes across the border, maybe they just want a job and a better life and an opportunity that America provides. Haven't been down there 14 times or 12 times, I get it. But it also means so too can enemies of this country that want to bring harm to our towns and cities, they can easily cross the border too, right?
Absolutely. It's dangerous to us. We need to end this lawlessness. And we have this surge of heroin, fentanyl, cocaine, marijuana, methamphetamine. Almost all of that is coming across the border, our border with Mexico, virtually all of it. We can gain some real advantages to slow that down, too, with a good controlled border. But people, I was like you, you know, we've seen the public entrance and exit places where people come through by the hundreds of thousands each day. So that won't end. It's only the illegality that we seek to end and to protect America. And I think, Sean, our Democratic colleagues, when they filibuster this bill, somebody needs to ask them who it is that they represent. Who are they trying to protect? Are they trying to protect drug dealers, illegal immigration people, gangsters who come across our border, or the American people? Who do they have a duty, an oath to support, protect, and defend? Well, it's the American people, no doubt about it.
Well, you're saying that $4 billion a year in excess payments over 10 years, that's $40 billion. How much do you think the wall is going to cost for the 700-some-odd miles that we want to build?
You know, I don't know what that would be. I hear some numbers that are certainly inflated, I understand, that people are throwing out. General Kelly and President Trump are focused on that. They're going to be building prototypes within a few months. And they'll study which ones are most effective and most cost-effective. So General Kelly was with me Thursday and Friday this week at Texas and San Diego at the border, and he's going to do a real good job of working on that.
Yeah. Let me ask you some other questions. There seem to be some unfinished business as it relates to the Attorney General's office on a number of matters when you came into office. One was Hillary Clinton's email server. One was the Clinton Foundation. These phony accusations, even though James Clapper and Comey and others said, and the media keeps running with this fake Russian story that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia, there's never been a shred of evidence. I know you have recused yourself from that particular case, but are any of these other cases moving forward at all? Because I just kind of think if Sean Hannity didn't follow the law and tried to circumvent Congress, and I had a private server with top secret information and special access program information on it, that I don't think I'd get off so easy.
Well, Sean, we have a duty to enforce the law, and I intend to try to do that. I'm making a determined effort to reduce public comment about any kind of investigations. And that goes back to the classical rule I was always taught in the Department of Justice, and that is you don't confirm or deny investigations. Mm-hmm. It just leads to more and more talk, which is unhealthy. So I'm not going to get into that, but if people have been violated the law and there's a case out there, we won't hesitate to bring those cases.
In other words, that wouldn't be the president's decision. For example, everyone likes to ask the president, well, what he's going to do about the Clinton Foundation or the email server scandal, but that would not be his decision, would it?
That's right. Usually our cases start at the lowest level with FBI and drug enforcement officers and alcohol, tobacco, and firearms people. They bring cases. Our prosecutors evaluate them and bring those cases every day. And that's the way the system works. Sometimes it is a case that comes in a different way, or the Attorney General is involved in, but usually not.
What do you make of all of these stories, Mr. Attorney General, about surveillance, unmasking, leaking of intelligence? For example, we know what happened to General Flynn was a violation of the Espionage Act. Is it possible to actually find the people responsible for leaking that information?
Well, we've had too much leaking. We've had too much loose talk, and some of the leaks have just been very, very damaging to our capabilities to be effective in the future by telegraphing to the enemy what our capabilities are so they can protect themselves against it. You don't want the terrorists to know how you might catch them, for heaven's sake. So, yes, we take this very seriously, and we will investigate cases, and it's true, and these are not easy to make, but it's not impossible either. We've had some pretty big names be proven guilty of these kind of offenses. And if people want to test us, we just may well break a case in the future, too.
All right, we got to take a break, and we'll come back. We'll continue more with the Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions.
Retired Air Force Captain Joni Marquez can't get the image out of her mind. A Navy SEAL ejected from a burning U.S. Chinook helicopter. Then his heat signature on an infrared camera fading from red to blue as life slipped from his body on the ground.
We had to sit and watch that, and I think that that was probably one of the hardest things that I had to do, was know that that man was, you know, dying on the ground. It's just one of those things where you know that it could have all been prevented.
Rules of engagement, changed under the Obama administration to prevent civilian casualties, kept them from firing against suspected targets without permission.
Right now, the rules of engagement are absolutely bizarre. They pour the blood of our soldiers out like water on the sand.
They lost a dad to this war. They lost someone that, meant everything to them. And for me, you know, I wasn't able to prevent that.
All right, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number, News Roundup and Information Overload Hour. You have a decorated, retired Air Force officer who witnessed one of the most deadly attacks on Navy SEALs. I mean, the best of the best in U.S. history, now breaking her silence, saying the government, in fact, covered up evidence detailing the 2011 downing of a Chinook helicopter gunship that killed 38 brave fighters in Afghanistan, and how it could have been prevented had it not been for restrictions to the military's rules of engagement, which I was just talking about with Jeff Sessions, that were changed under the Obama administration. That voice you heard narrating was our good friend Sarah Carter, who is the senior national security correspondent for Circa.com. She joins us, as well as retired Air Force Captain Joni Marquez, who witnessed this attack and said the government covered up the evidence and the details about all of this. 30 Americans killed, 8 Afghans killed. It could have been prevented. And Karen Vaughn, Karen's been on the program many times before, mother of Aaron Vaughn, who lost his life in this attack. Welcome all of you back to the program. Sarah, great work as always.
Thank you, Sean.
Captain Marquez, I'm so sorry that you had to witness this, but I'm very thankful that you're willing to speak out and tell the country what happened. And not only in this particular case, but what the rules of engagement were as it endangered brave men and women that were willing to fight, bleeding, die for their country.
Thank you, Sean, for having me. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you. Tell us the story. Tell us what happened.
So on that night, my crew and I, we were called in an emergency situation. And so that's why I described it as a 911 event. We were told to come overhead, the ground forces were infilling already. And so we were pushed south of the target area. They already had air weapons team ready for them to provide close ground support. And so for us, we were just kind of hanging out to the south of the target, waiting to be called overhead. The men, the ground forces, walked onto the objective area. And as they were probably 800 meters away, that's when they had a troops in contact. And I apologize, Sarah, if I wasn't clear enough when I spoke earlier, a couple months ago, about this situation. It wasn't really a firefight, you see. It was the ground forces taking fire from the enemy. And it probably lasted maybe 10 to 15 seconds. It was enough time for the JTAC to realize that they were being shot at, and he called in the AWT to take out the threat. From that point, we knew that there was a situation occurring, that the men were taking fire, and we wanted to be led overhead immediately. Unfortunately, the JTAC held us off. He only wanted the AWT to respond to the event. So they took two passes, and they took out the 8 Taliban members, or so they thought. At that point, the JTAC cleared us overhead. The sensors looked to the 8 men, and 2 of them were crawling away.
So 2 of them survived our attack against them.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So you're under fire. You call in assault helicopters to engage the enemy. That is literally your number one order to fly close in air support. above one of the most dangerous areas inside of Afghanistan, assisting troops with the Army 75th Ranger Regiment that were being fired on by these eight heavily armed Taliban insurgents. Okay, so you're able to kill six of them. Walk us through, two others are surviving here. What happens?
Right. So, mind you, the AWT were the ones that took out the six. And so then we were cleared overhead. And that's when the sensors and myself saw the two crawling away. And the navigator asked immediately for permission to engage because we knew that they were evading. And we didn't know their capability at that time if they were going to circle back and try to shoot at our men. So we wanted to eliminate the threat as quickly as possible. And
that would be after they've been firing on Americans. That would be common sense. Why do you even need permission at that point?
Well, because, you see, with a joint terminal attack controller being on the ground, he is responsible for all munitions that are being released during that point over an objective. He has the say as to what we can do for him because he calls us in. So
you were the fire control officer aboard this AC-130 gunship, right? You were making sure the sensors, weapons were aligned and allowing the crew to hone in on the targets. In other words, these two remaining people.
Correct.
And then permission was denied?
That is correct, because I'll have you know, Sean, at that point in time, the Hearts of Minds campaign obviously was ongoing. That was from 2003 until 2011. And during that time, it created a greater fog in this war. We questioned, you know, what it was that we could actually do. I mean, I remember a point in time where we were trying to set pre-assault fires, and there was a wall, and we were trying to figure out just amongst
my crew
and myself.
You tell the ground commander that you relay to this person that you have two enemy forces still alive, people that had been firing on U.S. troops. You ask for permission to engage. You're denied, and as a result, 30 Americans are killed, eight Afghanis, as the ones that were fighting are killed also, but 30 Americans are killed, including Karen Vaughn's son, who's on the line here, Aaron Vaughn.
That is
exactly.
Correct.
Hi, Sean. And sorry, go ahead. I don't know if you want me to jump in here, but I just want to add that, you know, when we went to Virginia Beach to receive the testimony of the, you know, of the investigation of the shoot down, we were given 2,500 some pages, and just as civilians, people who had no military background experience whatsoever, we learned that what was happening in this war was ungodly, unimaginable, and Sean, flat out criminal. And what Joni's explaining to you right now about the inability to shoot people who were shooting at Americans, this is a drop in the bucket to the stories we've heard, but it did, as you said, ultimately end up killing our son and 29 other Americans and, as you said, eight Afghans. And this nonsense has got to stop. This is the battle that Billy and I, have, my husband and I, have been fighting for the last 5.5 years, just saying if we can engage enough Americans and let them know what's happening to our warfighters, how they're being compromised by politicians and by attorneys that are sitting, you know, drinking wine over white linen tablecloths while these people are out here losing their lives. You know, people like you, Sean, have made this possible, and I thank God for you every day of my life, for people like you who keep sounding this alarm, and for Sarah Carter, who wrote this article. But most of all, Sean, and Sarah, I know you'll agree with me, for brave, fearless people like Joni, it's going to make me so emotional, who are willing to come forward and say, if I have to go to Leavenworth to tell the truth about what's happening in our military to save lives, I'll do it. And that's who Joni Marquez is. And there's probably nobody in this world that I have more profound respect for than her, for her willingness to put herself at risk like this. And wow, Joni.
Well, she's saying your son, Aaron, and he was one of 17 Navy SEALs, because those two men that she was not given permission to engage ended up literally picking up a Taliban fighter, hit one of those two, hit the Chinook with a rocket launch grenade. Sarah, I'll bring you in here. That ended up killing 30 Americans. 17 of them were Navy SEALs, including Aaron Vaughn, Karen's son. And by the way, months before, these same SEALs were the ones responsible for killing bin Laden. If they would have been allowed to engage, these men would be alive. Karen's son would be alive today.
Well, they were from the same counterpart team, SEAL Team 6 counterpart team that did kill Osama bin Laden. And you know, when you look at Joni, her bravery, an amazing human being who is willing to tell the truth and put her name on the record and speak out despite anything that was going to come towards her. So I give that respect to her. She is a voice for the voiceless, for all the people that have died because of ROEs or hearts and minds. You know, these issues that she brings up are not just this story. They're endemic to the entire problem that I was seeing in Afghanistan since I started going there in 2007, Sean. And you look at this, you look at this story and what she says, and you see that these two insurgents, they made their way out. They did not get permission to fire, to engage these two enemy fighters. And what happened was they made their way into a village, and they were able to get into the village and regroup with more and more fighters. And that was the issue. So they were regrouping. They were getting more people out there. They were moving further up and into the, you know, the LZ area of where the Chinook was eventually going to come into. But you can also hear from Joni's story that, you know, any calls down to the command, ground command, that to turn the Chinook back around, to not let it land, that the area was not safe, were also ignored. So these are the issues that we have to face and the issues that need to be faced as a nation. When we send our troops into harm's way to fight a war, we know that things are going to happen. But one of the things that we expect, and I think most people with common sense expect, is that our ground command and that our troops will have a say in the fight, that the fight will not be navigated from Washington, D.C.
You can't let people that aren't there make those decisions. It's just ridiculous. And in this case, 30 Americans died. All right, we're going to take a break. Sarah Carter, senior national security correspondent, Circa.com, retired Air Force Captain Joni Marquez. She could have prevented this. She could have stopped this. She wasn't given permission. One of the people that lost her sons was Karen Vaughn, mother of Navy SEAL Aaron Vaughn. We'll get to more on the other side. Then we'll get to your phone calls, 800-941-SEAN. As we continue, final moments here with Sarah Carter, senior national security correspondent for Circa.com, retired Air Force Captain Joni Marquez, Karen Vaughn. She lost her son, Aaron, a Navy SEAL. This was in this important Extortion 17 case, where, in fact, that we had Americans engaged with eight Taliban that were heavily armed, and two of them ended up surviving. And while they had an opportunity to engage and kill those two combatants, permission was denied. As a result, 30 Americans, including 17 Navy SEALs, were killed. Joni, I mean, Captain Marquez, this was all preventable. There's no doubt in your mind you had these two fighters in sight and you could have killed those engaging Americans and killing Americans.
Absolutely, Sean, and that's what's so disgusting about all of it. You know, I've been living with this hell for about 6 years of my life now, and I also would like to set the record straight on something. I apologize, Sarah, again, for not being clear on this because of nerves or whatnot from 2 months ago, but the actual enemy that took out the helicopter wasn't co-located with the 12 men that force gained up to be. They were probably another mile and a half away in some other building. So the two weren't even related in that regard.
Oh, my goodness.
I apologize for making myself clear on that as well.
No. You offered no apologies. You were doing your job,
absolutely.
And you were doing everything possible to keep our guys safe. And had you been able to do your job without these ridiculous rules of engagement, Karen Vaughn's son, Aaron, would be alive today. And Karen, if it was me, I'd be apoplectic every hour of every day. I'd never get over this.
You know, Sean, it's something I really have to monitor and control in myself, not to be angry. What I want now, the productive thing to feel now, is a desire for accountability, because only through that can we receive the change that we need to make sure another American son or daughter does not die to these reckless criminal rules of engagement. And that's the goal here. There's nothing I can do to bring Aaron back. I do want accountability for the people who made the decisions that night. Joni, when you hear more of her story, you will be even more stunned at what's about to come out, because that was just the first thing that went wrong that night, Sean, and it just kept getting worse from there. And, you know, I had an admiral turn around to the grieving parents at the debriefing, and one of the dads asked, why didn't we just use a drone strike on the guys that the SEALs were coming in to interdict that night? And Admiral Harward turned around and put his hand on my knee. I was sitting right behind him, and he said, because we want to win the Afghans' hearts and minds. And so basically, if I was as strong as I am today on that day, I probably would have punched the guy in the face, because he's looking at parents and wives sitting there grieving unimaginably over the deaths of their sons and their husbands. And that's his thing, is we cared more about the Afghans than we cared about your loved one's life. And that's exactly what's going on, and it has to stop.
Sarah, I'm going to give you the last word here because we're running out of time.
Well, I think the next step, Sean, is really going to be whether or not the Trump administration is going to take a good look at this and say, you know, what do we need to do to ensure that this never happens again, not on their watch, and that they can put into action rules of engagement that are reasonable, that don't tie the hands of our troops, our airmen, and that save lives instead of take lives. And I think that is going to be the most important thing to come out of this. Joni's bravery, Karen's bravery, the bravery of all the families that have spoken up, and the loss that they've endured is something that we all as Americans have to remember and not be afraid to seek the truth and find it and not be afraid to tell it.
Can I add one final word, Sean?
Yeah, really quick, Karen. We're out of time.
However a parent feels, let them fight or bring them home, Sean. Let them fight or bring them home.
I agree wholeheartedly. We're not going to fight. Bring them home. I agree. Thank you, Sarah Carter. Thank you, Karen Vaughn. You're in our prayers. And many, many thanks, Captain Joni Marquez, for your courage in speaking out so we can prevent this ever from happening again. All right, 800-941-SEAN. When we come back, wide open telephones. You want to join us? All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. Wow, what incredible times we're living in. I can't believe that last half hour. 30 Americans die because the engage order is denied. Let's just pull out let's give you time to get the rocket launch grenade and let's kill 17 Navy SEALs and 13 other Americans. Unbelievable. All right, 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of this extravaganza. Wide open telephones. Let's say hi to David in North Carolina. David, hi. How are you? Glad you called, sir.
You're a great American, and what a privilege to speak with you. I understand you were recently in Israel as I listened to your broadcast. I was just there last month and presented our tour guide a Make America Great Again hat. And almost everywhere I went, I had Jews asking, does America like Trump? And I said, well, half of us do. And they said that Trump was good for Israel, and did we agree? And I said, absolutely, Trump is good for Israel.
Listen, let me tell you something. I can only tell you at the end of the day that Israel has the least landmass of any country, and it's literally surrounded by Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and Egypt. And at different times, they've been surrounded by nothing but enemies and taking incoming from all sides. And then they got the Mediterranean on the other side. When you fly in a helicopter, like I do, like I did last week, and you see just the landmass here, as Bibi was saying, all right, it takes 5.5 hours to go from New York to L.A. It takes 5 minutes to go across Israel, the same plane. That pretty much says it all. They need defendable borders. They need to build peace with real partners. You know, you can't have Mahmoud Abbas talking about, you know, the blood of Israelis and saying and indoctrinating kids to killing Jews, you know, and say that where he lives and then come to Washington and say, oh, I want peace. Just give me money and tell Israel to give us land. Then they have no defensible borders. So it's ridiculous to me. Anyway, 800-941-SEAN, you want to be a part of the program. Back to our busy phones. Let's say hi to Lee is in Durango in Colorado. What's going on? How are you, sir?
First of all, I'm not a sir, I'm a ma'am, but I'm calling. Last week you were talking about Linda throwing bread at you.
Yeah, no. Linda claimed I threw bread at her.
Okay.
When we
okay,
were on the plane. That's when we were on the LAL, and Linda said yes. I threw a loaf of bread at her, and it wasn't true.
Right. So, in your defense, I wanted to call and say there is a restaurant here in America that makes its claim on throwed rolls. They throw rolls across the restaurant. When you say you want another roll, they chuck them all the way across the restaurant. So I think you're in good company, and I think you can throw all the bread and rolls you want.
Well, exactly. I was trying to be nice because Linda didn't have her food. I had mine. I was trying to share. And literally on El Al, when you across the way like that, there was nothing in between us. It's not like I was hitting anybody. I just threw the roll. Well, it just wasn't one of my best toss because I was tired.
Except that you did hit somebody. So.
I did not hit anybody.
You hit him.
It hit the top of your chair.
First of all, it's a mini loaf. It's not like it's a makeup loaf. It's a mini loaf with little lines and, you know.
All right, it's not a loaf of bread. It is a baby roll. It
not
is,
a baby roll. There was a baby roll next to the loaf.
You couldn't even put an egg inside this. It was
you
so baby.
You could have put two eggs inside of it.
Yeah. That's
you're going senile in your old age, let me tell you.
First of all, Linda, he's your boss. Let him throw rolls.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you tell him?
Did you tell him what you threw in the morning?
You throw it at me in the morning?
I don't think it matters what time.
Oh, trust me. He threw something else in the morning. Why don't you tell him he throw at me in the morning across the aisle? You don't remember, do you? Sean took off his dirty socks that he wore, and then he threw them at me across the aisle.
That is a lie, because when you get in first class on El Al, they give you this little baggie with toothpaste and lotion and earmuffs and eye things that you close your eyes with. And so I get on, and they also include socks. So I said, here, Linda, you want a free pair of socks? And I gave her the fresh, brand-new LL socks that
I stand corrected.
Given.
They were clean and fresh socks that he threw at me.
That's right. They
Big
were
difference.
Because I'm never going to wear those LL socks. I'm not wearing socks.
Mind you, the beautiful woman sitting next to me, Lee, this beautiful woman, Livia, is sitting next to me. She goes, that's your boss? I said, yeah. She goes, it's more like your brother. He's like your brother.
I was, like passing, them on to you. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you're
The rolls in the socks.
There you go. See, now you got an idea. We're all going to get jobs at the restaurant where we all throw rolls at each other and we'll take our socks
off.
And
it's a fabulous restaurant. Great.
It'll be a big hit.
It is a hoot.
I'll put it in Times Square. The tourists will come from miles to do it. I think it's a great idea, Lee. I love it.
All right. Well, look it up. It's in Missouri, Lambert.
All right. Thank you. We appreciate it so much. Lee in Durango, Colorado. Let's go to Heather in Clearwater, Florida. Heather, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Hi, Sean. Thank you for taking my call today. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Well, I am furious over Obamacare. My parents have become victims of Obamacare. Basically, about 8.5% of my dad's gross income is unusable. So they paid, because of the subsidy of the premiums, and he was paid more in the prior year. He was taxed over $8,000 because of the subsidy. They were going to get a refund back until I put in his insurance information. And mind you, the Obamacare was never usable. They've had to be self-pay patients at every doctor because there is either no network or the doctor will not accept it. And I'm outraged that the GOP can't get their stuff together and repeal this.
Well, listen, it's the only thing I know is they've come to some agreement, and it was announced this weekend. I don't think they're going to get it done this week, which I wish they would have. I knew this was going to happen, which is why I kept saying last week I wanted them to come back from recess. And if they would have come back from recess, it would have been a lot better, because now they've got to deal with the CR, and Democrats are threatening to shut the government down, which I'm all in favor. If they want to shut it down, shut it down. Over funding the border wall, that's an 80-20 issue, 70-30 issue for Republicans. And the American people in the last election said that they want that border wall. So I'm all for it. Let them shut the government down, and they'll take the blame for it, and they'll show that they're obstructionists, just like with Neil Gorsuch and every cabinet appointee of Donald Trump. There's hardly a Democrat that will ever vote for Trump. They just refuse to work to make the country a better place. After they gave us the mess that was Obama on the economy, Obama's foreign policy. So I think it's in, you know, let everybody understand. But I do believe, based on the waiver agreement that the study group, the Freedom Caucus, the moderates, all the varying coalitions the Republicans in the House have made in consultation with the U.S. Senate, I think we get to the point where it's going to get done now. And that's good news for people like your parents and people that have seen dramatic increases this year alone, 116% premium increase in Arizona on average since Obamacare passed, $5,400 a year per family increases. We didn't keep our doctors. We didn't keep our plans. And we didn't save $2,500 per family per year. And nobody in the media will tell you that. Anyway, I appreciate it. 800-941-SEAN is our number. Wayne is, where are you, Wayne? My buddy Wayne Dupree, is that you? What's going on, my friend?
What's up, big brother? How you doing? How's everything? You holding up?
I'm holding up, man. What's going on?
Good, good, good. Listen, I have been, you know, how things happen on the internet and stories go by and everything. I'm watching some lady claim some things about you, and I just want to let you know I got your back. I'm because I've been, you know, we've been together for 5-6 years now.
Yes, sir.
And I know just how important your reputation is, and you have done everything. You talk about your life, you talk about your Christian background, you talk about what you are, what your family means to you. We know how you take care of your taxes, and you look over your taxes 2 and 3 times because you know that the government is out for you. So we know that you watch over your reputation so that it is not sullied by opportunists. And when I saw this yesterday, I was like, oh my God. You know, I had my website, and I didn't want to do anything until I saw something from you. And then when I learned later on in the day that you're going to take care of it the way that you're going to take care of it, then I said, you know what? I got you.
Listen, I will say this. People have been amazing. Listen, none of this is fun. You know what it's like. You're in the public eye as I am. And yep. It's open season on conservatives. And in this environment, it's let's take them down. People don't understand that every word we utter, you know, on radio or TV or on the internet is being monitored. You know, I'd like to say we're all perfect people. Nobody's perfect. I mean, but in this particular case, as I said earlier, this individual has for well over a decade been lying about me, making
right.
false charges and telling lies about me. And, you know, it gets to a point, you know, where
you got to do something.
You just got to do something here. And
you have to.
And for me, you know, this is the bottom line for me. This is not about me. This is not about any one individual. But if it doesn't stop now, if I don't stand
right.
up for myself
right.
here, it's never going to end. And so I'm putting
right.
everybody on notice that I'm not going to take this crap. And if you slander me, if you lie about me, if you besmirch me, I now have a team of the best attorneys in the country, and I'm going after you.
Right.
And that's
you
it. And that goes for news organizations. That goes for political organizations. You know what? I'm just going to put these people on retainer and pay them, and I'm going after everybody.
You know, one thing that I want everybody out there to understand is that you have to do this because the left, and even the right, feel like they can make a name for themselves if they throw these things out there and then the next day, well, you know what? I really didn't say it like that. Oh, you took me out of context. No. Sooner or later, you have to show these people that they can't do this because, and then if they do it to you, they'll do it to anybody else, they'll do it to me, they'll do it to, and we can't do that. But I just wanted to call in to tell your audience, because I know most of them support you, but I
appreciate it. And I will say this, the audience gets it. The audience, you know, I laid out the facts for everybody. People have common sense. They get it. And I get it. You know, I've had a bullseye on my back for 30 years in radio, 21 and a half years in Fox. I can handle this. But having people being so supportive is really humbling, to be honest. Thank you, my friend. Wayne Dupree, Baltimore. Vanessa in New Mexico. We got a minute for you, Vanessa. How are you? Glad you called.
I'm doing great, Sean. Thank you. And I just want to tell you, I am so thankful you're fighting back. I am so thankful you have the courage, you have the backbone, you're not going to take this crap. I was so glad also to see that at Berkeley, the Republican students are threatening to sue. This is what we have to do to keep common sense, courageous, compassionate people in the public eye. So thank you. I'll be on my knees in prayer. And, you know, as you continue to tell us, let not your heart be troubled because Jesus has overcome the world. So just keep fighting.
Amen. I agree. All right. Thank you so much, Vanessa. And by the way, thanks to, you know, all of you irredeemable deplorables out there because, you know, we don't have the honor of this microphone without your help and support. You get to decide. That's why, you know, all these boycotts and silencing and all these efforts by the left to silence people, it's unbelievable to me. Let the people decide. And if they don't want this show on the air anymore, it'll go away. Problem is they know that people see it as the, like, sole alternative to the mainstream media.